Hi, I'm KSL's Debbie Worthen. 4 years ago, my son Asher was diagnosed with autism. After getting our footing, we decided it was time to celebrate the news with all of you. And that's how Celebrating the Spectrum was born. Each week, we consult with the experts and others who are learning to navigate life with a loved one who has special needs. This is a place where we find hope, look for solutions, and connect with those working to create a better world of inclusion. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Celebrating the Spectrum. We are joined today by Jared Stewart. Jared is the program director at Scenic View Academy, which is a nonprofit transitional school for young adults with autism and other learning differences. Jared has also been named Educator of the Year by the National Association of Private Special Education Centers. He is an adjunct professor and curriculum developer at Utah Valley University, where he teaches classes in disability awareness and provides tutoring and college support. He has also spent 2 decades working with adults on the spectrum and has shared his views on the techniques and mindsets that lead to improved outcomes with local and national audiences. Jared's passion for the subject comes from personal experience. He has family members with autism and has been diagnosed himself with Asperger's syndrome. We also have Carrie Bushman with us here. Carrie, host on FM 100, also all things knowledgeable when it comes to the autism community, because she's so well connected. It's been so nice to have her as a resource for the show. Jared, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Debbie. I'm glad to be here.
We've heard so many great things about you.
Well, I hope I don't disappoint too badly.
I just read that big giant intro, some of your credentials. How would you describe yourself?
I like to call myself an ambassador for autism. So I'm an autistic self-advocate, and I'm someone who I want to show the world different ways of looking at the autism spectrum than maybe they're used to, and hopefully to also give some hope.
Yeah.
Like in everything, there's so much focus on the negative side of autism, and there's obviously challenges, but we need a lot more of the celebration of the uniqueness and the strengths of autism as well.
Well, which I don't know if you listened to our opening episode, but that is the whole reason we chose the name Celebrating the Spectrum. As we started,
I love the name of your series.
Yeah, as we started to get to know our son Asher, it was just like, wow, this kid celebrates life. We celebrate him. He's pure joy. Not all the time, but a lot of time. So, Carrie, where did you two meet?
Jared was my professor at UVU.
Was she a good student?
Yes.
Did she get an A?
She did get an A, and she earned it.
She earned it, okay.
And then she was my TA for a while.
That's so true.
Yeah. What did you like about Jared? Because you said we have to have Jared on the show.
The same thing. Just he talks about it with hope, that it's not like this heavy burden and this heavy thing we have to talk about. It's like, look at all these great things, look at all these options, and it's more of an interest, you know, than a disability or a, you know.
No, I love that. That's fantastic. So I read you were diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome. So tell us about that. That's no longer an official diagnosis.
No, it was had a very brief day in the sun.
And, how long was it?
It was just from 1994 to 2013. So it was only about not even quite 20 years.
That's interesting because we just still hear that all the time. I mean, people all the time will say, oh, it's your son Asperger's. It's like, well, it's not really a diagnosis anymore, but
it's not. And people shouldn't probably be getting that as a diagnosis, but it is shorthand for what some people would call high functioning autism.
Yeah. And I think that's what they're trying to say when they, they say something.
They're trying
like
to say they're autistic, but they're verbal and, you know, maybe they're doing okay academically and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's honestly, I identify now more as autism spectrum. So years ago, when the diagnosis first changed, Deseret News did a profile on me for the newspaper back when newspapers were a thing. And the
they still are. It's just digital.
I know, and I love them. But the idea of being Asperger's, about two things basically happened. One was that people began to realize that it's named for Hans Asperger, who was this Nazi scientist during World War II.
Well, I just learned that recently. I was reading this book kind of on the origins of all of this. And I read that and I'm like, okay, we needed to get rid of that.
We did. And I mean, he did some good and he did save the lives of some kids with disabilities, but he also sent others with disabilities to the ass chambers.
Yes.
So there was kind of that piece to it. Right. And then the other one, and I think the more practical one, although, you know, the other one's definitely important, is that you couldn't get insurance coverage because insurance doesn't want to have 10,000 different labels for this. They want to be able to cover one thing. And so another really popular diagnosis for people who were autistic but maybe were verbal and had some other abilities was PDDNOS, so pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. And so being
you know, I'm that sounded funny when you just said it.
Right?
I've read that 100 times, but it sounds funny.
Well, it does.
It's kind of like, we don't know what to do with
you. Yeah, it's basically like, you've got something, but we don't know what it is. So it's PDDNOS, right? And so being able to lump all those together and say, this is a spectrum, mm-hmm. right? And this is a very broad spectrum. And so there's some, you know, as a result, there's going to be a huge variance in the spectrum, but there already was. And Now what they found is that the services that are needed are pretty much the same. The challenges are the same. They're just unique to the individual.
So that's progress.
Very much.
Right, right. Okay, so when you talk about your autism, you refer to it as what?
So no? I'll say I'm autistic or I'm on the autism spectrum.
I'm on the autism spectrum. I like that.
Yeah.
That seems nice.
Right?
Right?
And it also, autism more than PDDNOS or Asperger's talks a lot about the sensory side of it, which is a universal for those of us on the spectrum, mm-hmm. is that there's a lot of sensory issues. And so for all of those reasons, I think autism's probably the best.
Right. You know, the sensory stuff, I just see that in everyone I know.
Mm-hmm.
Not autistic, neurotypical. Everyone has some degree of that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I would love to tell someone that my son was that big, long acronym. That'd be funny.
You should.
Yeah. Just to get the conversation rolling. Okay. So what age were you when this all transpired? Did you know?
I knew I was different, right? Mm-hmm. So I grew up on an island in Alaska. And for a long time, I told people, you know, I'm from an island in Alaska, and that was my label.
Wait, our producer Ryan just told us a dad joke, but that sounds like the beginning of a dad joke right there. I grew up on an island in Alaska.
Well, no, it was just the basis of like everything. So if I had really poor abilities to like socialize or remember people's names, it's like, oh, well, you know, I grew up on an island in Alaska, mm-hmm. and there was more bears than people, right? You know, and if I didn't fit in, you know, with my fashion sense or anything, it's like, oh, well, you know, I grew up on an island in Alaska, and we ordered out of catalogs. We didn't have stores and stuff, and you know, and if I couldn't drive in a city because there's too much sensory information going on, it's like, well, you know, I grew up on an island and we only had one stoplight. And, you know, I mean, so I could use it for a lot of things.
And it's funny.
Yeah. And yet inside I knew I'm different, right. And even very different than the people who grew up on this island. Right. You know, it's like if other people from this island knew it, I was from Kodiak. If other people from Kodiak knew it, they'd be like, but I'm not that way at
all. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I had a lot of other, you know, terms I'd applied to myself. I was crazy. I was dumb. I was, you know, I was insane. I was.
Now, these are terms by you or others.
Myself, sometimes from others. I was a geek. I was a nerd. You know, all of these things. But I was different, and I knew I was kind of covering it up and trying to fit into a neurotypical world without knowing those words even. And so I made it through college and had a lot of ups and downs. But I got married. I successfully got married. Mm-hmm.
You're still married?
I am still
same
married.
Same person?
Same person. Congrats. Coming up on 25 years next
Congratulations.
Year. Right?
Every year is an accomplishment.
It is.
Yes.
Absolutely. I give grace to her. She's been great. She put up with a lot of, well, you know, I grew up on an island in Alaska.
She's
when
like,
we were first
if
married.
I ever hear that again. Yeah.
Well, I had to explain to her why when I walked in the house from the hot outdoors and we had air conditioning inside, and that change in temperature made it so that like getting touched was physically painful for me. Mm-hmm. And she'd want to like give me a big hug as I walk in the door. And I had to explain why I was like kind of pushing her away instead of giving her a hug. And so, you know, she had put up with a lot of that. But
isn't it great you knew that?
Yeah. I at least had that self-awareness, but I didn't have a name for it.
Yeah.
And long story short, I actually started at Scenic View Academy a little over 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
like right out of college or what?
I'd done a couple of years of teaching junior high and then.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hats off to you.
Well, yeah. And I determined I could not do that. And my hat's off to all junior high teachers.
Yeah.
But I was going to go into special ed and I was going to go to grad school for that. And I needed a summer job. And I got hired as a tutor at Scenic View Academy. And my very first day sitting down with another student, we were reading. I was like, okay, what are we doing? He's like, well, we're practicing reading. I'm okay, what are we reading? We're reading The Oasis Guide to Asperger's Syndrome. I'm like, I have no idea what that is. And so we're sitting here reading and I'm like, wait, tell me more about this Asperger's. What is this? And what is, you know, can I borrow this book when we're done reading this? Because all of a sudden, all these things that I didn't even realize were related in my life, all of a sudden just came together and made so much sense. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I self-diagnosed, mm-hmm. which a lot of adults do,
mm-hmm.
Especially biological females will self-diagnose long before they ever actually get a diagnosis. Because we don't fit, you know, the mold of, you know, you were a nonverbal kid. I was a hyperverbal kid.
Yeah, that's right? my son's like that too. Yeah.
Yeah, I talked early and have not shut up since. So it's, you know, just different degrees. But I, you know, and then not too long after that, my youngest brother got officially diagnosed with autism.
Oh, interesting.
And so then I was like, oh.
How old was he at the time?
He was in his late teens.
Okay.
I want to say.
Do you think it was maybe kind of a generational thing that you didn't get that diagnosis earlier?
Absolutely.
Because we didn't know.
You think about it, right? I mean, the stereotype was Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man.
It was. And a book I was reading says, you know, if there's ever something that's big in the world, Tom Cruise plays a role in it. You know?
Right.
And that really brought autism kind of to the U.S. and the forefront, that stereotypical savant autism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for us old people, go back and watch Rain Man. Mm-hmm. Watch Tom Cruise's performance, because his character also could be a portrayal of autism.
Interesting. I need to do that.
You do.
Yeah.
Go back
yeah.
and watch from that perspective of, here's someone who really actually is faking his social skills. Mm-hmm. Someone who really, rather than being honest to a fault, he's lying all the time. Here's somebody who is, you know, really doesn't know how to connect with others, mm-hmm. doesn't have a lot of empathy, you know, and yet through the movie, you see his character arc, but it's like, I've met a lot of autistic adults who are Tom Cruise in Rain Man.
Yeah.
I've met a few autistic adults who are Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man.
Right.
And of course, there's a great saying Temple Grandin has, which is, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
It's my favorite. When I heard that for the first time, it was just like the light went on. I love that. All right. So you self-diagnosed. Then what happens?
So I called up the University of Illinois and said, I'm not coming to grad school. I'm going to work at this scenic view place. And after several years there, I finally got up the courage to go get officially diagnosed, because I wanted to be able – I didn't need the services, right? And mm-hmm. so the struggle with the diagnosis is, do I actually need these services? Do I need these benefits? Is it helpful? For me, it was a piece of identity that was very important. But for that very reason, it was hard to go get diagnosed, because I was scared to death the therapist was going to be like, no, you're too high functioning. And I hate that term, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're too high functioning. You can't be autistic. And so I went in to the therapist and I had a whole presentation prepared. And
Carrie told us about this. This is hilarious.
I had all of my mom, who is probably also on the spectrum, never throws anything away. Mom, I love you, but you know it. And she had all of my old like preschool papers and kindergarten write-ups and all this stuff. And I brought it all in. And, you know, the therapist opens up with, well, so what brings you to my office today?
Let me show you my thesis.
Exactly. It's like, funny you should ask. And, you know, I'm bringing it all up and I'm showing all the papers and everything. And if I'd had a PowerPoint, I would have done a PowerPoint. And I was just a few minutes into this. And he's like, okay, whoa. Yes, you've got autism.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
And it was one of the few times in my life I've just cried because it was such an emotional release for me. So it was very much, yes, it's a condition, but it's also made so much sense to me as my identity, and then mm-hmm. things that had not made sense before and labels I'd put on myself, that suddenly I had a hook to hang it all on, and I could actually like know this is who I am. And also because of that, here are the challenges I'm going to be facing, mm-hmm. but also the strengths I'm going to have. And that's, again, been a cornerstone of my career for the last couple of decades then, because it's fascinating to be – so I'm a child of autism. I'm an adult with autism. I've got a child with autism. I've got siblings with autism. And one of my autistic special interests is autism. And so that's worked out pretty well.
That's worked out well. That seems like a natural fit.
But it's so funny, because my life, I never thought – would going that, in mm-hmm. that direction at all.
Well, we just didn't picture that.
No.
Right?
No, and again, growing up, it's like autism wasn't a thing.
Yeah. No, we talk so much about this on the show, because mm-hmm. I'm in my late 40s, and as a kid, I didn't know any autistic kids. And I do now, looking back. No, several, you know. But we had no interaction with even the kids with special needs.
No, there was no mainstreaming. There was none of that, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And the numbers as of last year, the CDC's latest numbers, it's 1 in 44 mm-hmm. on the autism spectrum.
Right.
And that breaks down to 4% of boys. So 1 in 25 biological males is on the autism spectrum.
Yeah. And this is one of the big reasons we started the show, too. You know, my son mainstreamed into public school, and all of a sudden there are two other autistic kids in the school of 900 kids. Well, where are the other 20?
Exactly.
You know, and I have just
not doing a great job of identifying them.
I have a real problem with that. Or we're not doing a good job of mainstreaming them, or creating any type of inclusion that looks remotely close to what research has shown would be helpful for everyone, both sides.
Exactly. And when you realize that a lot of the most successful people on planet Earth today are on the autism spectrum, we're wasting so much potential. And there's absolutely no point in it. There's nothing in the autism diagnosis that says this person can't contribute to society. There's unlimited contributions that can be done by people with all kinds of disabilities and autism. Absolutely.
We did a Celebrating the Spectrum assembly for my son's school last year, which I couldn't believe that didn't exist, but it didn't. And I started out with some pictures of a Tesla and you know, and some and an iPhone and all these things and all the kids and all of a sudden for those little kids it was just like, whoa, that actually is really cool. And I wanted it to be that eye opener. You know, we talk about it as an obsession, but can't we talk about it as an extreme interest?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of thing. Okay. I could go on for hours about that. So you talk about Scenic View Academy. Tell us what that is.
So Scenic View Academy is a...
Can I stop you really quick? This is not an ad. It's not a promotion. It's not paid. This is just information. I'm really specific with the show on that because I have no interest in hosting a show where I have to say certain things.
Understood.
Okay.
No, and I respect that completely. And as I explain Scenic View and say it's the greatest place in the world, it's not because I'm trying to sell anybody on it.
Because you love it.
I've been there 20 years and I don't think I've stuck with anything other than my wife longer. but it is a residential, private, not-for-profit school, 501c3 down in Provo, Utah, just at the mouth of the canyon there, down from Sundance. And it is a place where you can come to live if you are between like 18 and 30 and either autistic, ADHD, some type of neurodiversity there. And that if you're really committed to living on your own and you just kind of need that extra boost to get launched, to be able to find a job and that, our program is Live, Work, Thrive. So we're going to teach independent living skills. We're going to help you learn the social skills and, you know, the constructive leisure management skills. And we're going to help you find a job and then, you know, get on with your life. And so it's super exciting. And we have about 60 students at any given moment.
It seems like there'd be a huge waiting list. Is there?
There's quite a waiting list, but we move people through. You have a maximum time you can be there, and because people pay based on their ability to pay.
Yeah, I was going to say, with that, is it covered by insurance?
Some of the therapies and so forth might be, but there is, one of the huge problems with autism and autism services is there's this imaginary thing in the insurance industry that you lose your autism at the age of 21. And so getting coverage in adulthood for anything with autism is very difficult. So most of it is private pay, but thanks to our founders, we were founded by Ray and Ty Norda, who founded Novell.
Right.
And so we're able to admit people based on their ability rather than what it actually costs.
No, that is fantastic. So if someone wants to get themselves or their loved one into Scenic View, what do they do?
Just Google us. Just go to scenicviewacademy.org. And yeah.
Okay.
Fill out the forms there and we'll talk. And it'll tell you even like basically the profile of who's likely to be accepted and what we're looking for, because we can only serve so much.
Right.
And we definitely specialize in autism, but it's just a very narrow slice of the spectrum.
Right.
And
okay.
We're very aware of that. But
yeah.
But it's a slice that needs to be served that isn't getting services elsewhere.
Right. No, it's so interesting about the whole insurance thing with the, you know, adults on the spectrum.
Yeah,
it's like, man.
The funny
crazy
thing about kids with autism is they grow into adults with autism. I mean, it's just the darndest thing. And there's like 6 million adults, last count, in the country that are autistic. And yeah, they're not getting services hardly.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's horrible, actually. All right. I stumbled across the autism conference information from a panel you led at Utah Valley University. The questions to the autistic panel look to be geared toward parents concerned about their autistic child's future and the worry that parents feel about the complicated path ahead. I wish I could have attended that. Those seem like great topics. What do you tell parents who worry? And this is, you know, most of this podcast is so selfish. It's like, I can't even believe I get paid to do this. What do you tell parents who worry about their autistic child and the future? And
well, obviously, every parent worries about your child's future.
When you have extra heightened.
Right. But that's kind of autism, right? It's just like it's normal to the extreme, right? Mm-hmm. So worry is normal. Autistic parents are going to worry to the extreme. But what I try to tell them is I tell them the story of Donald Triplett. So it sounds like you were reading in a different key. Is that the book you were reading about the history of autism?
No, it is. That's not it. I'll have to.
Okay.
It's filed. It's coming. I can't think of the name right off the bat.
Okay. Well, Karen Zucker wrote a book called In a Different Key, and she and some of the others in her group went. And long story short, they tracked down the very first case of autism ever. Mm-hmm. And it was a little boy named Donald Triplett. Mm-hmm. And he was 5 years old in Forest, Mississippi, in an insane asylum. And he'd been there since he was three.
Yeah, I did read about him, but talk about it, because we haven't talked about it on the show.
Well, and I tell parents Donald's story, basically, which is that, again, autism is based on Donald. Donald would spin himself. He would flap his hands. He'd draw things in the air with his fingers. He gave people numbers instead of names. He didn't make eye contact. He had sensory issues, all of these other things. And so Dr. Connor, you know, was looking at him. He's like, well, this kid's not – he's not insane. Mm-hmm. He's just differently wired. Mm-hmm. And he seemed lost in himself. And that's where autism came from. It's auto. It's self. It's being self-focused or lost in self is where the term comes from. And so all this diagnosis and all these people who have been given the autism diagnosis, it all stems from Donald. Mm-hmm. Well, Donald, obviously being the first, he didn't have, you know, there was no applied behavior analysis. There weren't these early childhood interventions. There weren't special programs. There was obviously no ADA, mm-hmm. none of these things. When they went and they followed up with Donald, he was in his...
Well, what he did have is really proactive parents, because they're like, we're taking him out of this, right?
They did. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Connor said, well, why don't... If you can't handle him instead of an asylum, let's put him with a foster family on a farm. And so he went to a farm and he started working and living in this tiny little town in Forest, Mississippi. And when they followed up, Donald's still alive today. He's in his 80s.
Right.
Donald graduated high school. Donald graduated college. Donald is a retired bank teller.
He's traveled the world alone.
Yep. You know? Absolutely.
And I don't mean alone. I mean independently.
Yeah, independently. Yep. And he got his driver's license when he was 27. Mm-hmm. Right. So you see the delay. Autism is a developmental delay. But what I try to tell parents is it's a developmental delay. And that doesn't mean you're going to be behind forever. And also you don't know and can't know how this person's going to turn out. Mm-hmm. So all you can do is help to maximize this person rather than to, you know, give up or to despair. There is so much hope, and there are so many stories of hope, and Donald's is obviously the most,
I love
the
it.
Most prominent one.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk more to Jared Stewart. We are back with Jared Stewart and Carrie Bushman. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Celebrating the Spectrum. And Jared, you teach a class at Utah Valley University, and you also do some other stuff there. Tell us about what your role is at the university.
Okay, so I'm an adjunct with the Melissa Nelson Center for Autism at Utah Valley University, and we run the Autism Conference annually, and also I do what's called the Passages Program, where we work with incoming freshmen at Utah Valley University who are on the autism spectrum, and I run classes for them on autism in adulthood and succeeding as an autistic adult, on acceptance and commitment therapy. I'm a behavioral psychologist. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about anxiety and emotional regulation and all of that kind of stuff.
Okay. So this is a very general question, but we're learning on this show as we go. My son's six. We're just very new into this whole thing. I'd say we're really like 6 months into it, because our first few years were just ignorant bliss when he was at a private therapy school. So what is something that people say to us autistic adults that's just flat out wrong?
Oh, there's so many. But one of the ones that I hear all the time is, well, you don't look autistic.
And why is that offensive? Because when people say that, I think they are trying to compliment the person.
Yeah. But basically, could you imagine if the greatest compliment you ever got was like, wow, you are so normal. Right. You know, I'm like, am I supposed to be complimented that? It's like, you know, compliments are supposed to be things that stick out, that are mm-hmm. exceptional.
Yeah.
And so, so it's kind of insulting in the sense of like, is there supposed to be an autistic look? Are you mm-hmm. assuming all autistic people are the same? Mm-hmm. And so I'll ask my students, you know, what do you say when someone says that, you know,
you don't look autistic? What do they say?
And my favorite answer, she raised her hand. She's like, I say, and you don't look stupid. And yet here we are. And I was like, really? You say that? We all died laughing. I was like, you say that? She's like, no, but I thought about it.
No, but I want to.
I wanted to say it.
Yeah.
And really, yeah, it's like, yeah. So a lot of times I'll be like, well, thank you, I think, but let me educate you a little.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What do you tell them? What is the better?
The better way is to say like,
can't say that.
Wow. Cool. Tell me about some of your special interests or mm-hmm. wow, you know, sensorily and this kind of things, you know, you've done really well at putting up with mm-hmm. this neurotypical world here. I never would have guessed. Whatever. I mean, we can be very accommodating to others that, like you said, are just mm-hmm. starting out or just learning.
Yeah.
And we all need to be more accepting of that.
Yeah. And I think it's so helpful to talk to people on the spectrum yes. to get the actual perspective.
And the more that they can do that yeah. and the more lived perspectives that they'll see and, you know, the more they research, the more we educate ourselves, obviously, the better we're going to be talking with any group of people. Right.
We have two adopted kids and people have said, oh, they look just like you. It was meant to be. And I know a lot of adopted kids hate that. And so one of my producers on the news is adopted. I'm like, why do you hate that? You know,
yeah.
And what should people say? And why is that offensive? So it's really nice to come to the source, mm-hmm. to come to the source here. All right. I'm sure a lot of thought has gone into the topic we're about to broach, and that is getting and keeping a job as an autistic. Okay. Why is this such a challenge? And this is one of the things that you specialize in at, I'm sure, the Academy, and also at the conference you talked about this.
Yeah, and this is one of the biggest questions I get from parents, right? Because every parent is facing two cliffs, right? They face the service cliff when their child graduates high school and they no longer get IDEA or government, you know, mandated mm-hmm. services. And then there's a second cliff that's even scarier, which is when the parent can no longer care for the child, right? Whether old age, disease, death, poverty, whatever it is. And so every parent is saying, you know, is my child ever going to have the ability to live on their own? Are they ever going to have friends? Are they going to have a job? What's going to happen to them when I'm gone, when I'm not able to take care of them? And obviously employment's huge. That is the single biggest piece of any person's identity. The mm-hmm. first person, you know, first thing you say when you meet somebody is like, so what do you do?
Yeah, you're right.
And so it's no different with autism, and autistics want to work. But here's a fascinating stat. Out of every disability, people with autism have the lowest rate of employment.
Yes.
Which is just astounding.
What is the reason for that?
There's a lot of reasons, but the main one is that fundamentally autism is a social and communication disability. Mm-hmm. And the most important skills on a job are not the technical skills. And if they were, autistic people would have the highest rate of employment
yeah.
because if
yes.
you can find the right match, mm-hmm. they're going to have an amazing technical ability in that skill. But it's the soft skills, right? It's the social skills. It's the getting along with coworkers, being able to communicate, being able to catch nuance, being able to make others comfortable and confident working with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I try to tell my students is like, yes, get good at what you're doing. And then also realize you're going to have to work on your social skills. And it doesn't mean you have to be friends with everybody at work. It doesn't mean you even have to like them.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean you've got to figure out ways to help them know how to work effectively with you, and you're going to have to work extra hard to be effectively working with them. And so as a result, people with autism and intellectual disabilities, which is about almost half, they actually have higher employment rates because people kind of excuse their behaviors a little more.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, well, they have obvious intellectual disabilities, so yeah, we'll put up with this and this and
mm-hmm.
this. But when you don't have those obvious intellectual disabilities, people just assume, of course you know this, and why wouldn't you, you know this, and
mm-hmm.
why would you ever say that or do that? And they start attributing really terrible motivations. It gets very discouraging at work. You realize you don't have any friends at work. You're not accepted by the social group at work. And again, this hasn't been my experience, but I've talked to hundreds of adults who this has been their experience. And they get fired and they say, well, why did I, you know, or they quit. And they don't know why they got fired. And
why it didn't work out.
And why it didn't work yeah. out, and no one will tell them. And then when, you know, when they quit, they're like, autism is very all or nothing. And so they don't want to go back. They don't want to try again. And the world says, yeah, that's okay. You're disabled. You don't need to.
Mm, that's demoralizing.
Incredibly demoralizing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because every human being needs to contribute.
Well, I was just going to say, I've never worked somewhere where I haven't done work that I feel like is very purposeful. And you talk about that identity. That really struck a chord for me because when COVID hit and I left the job I was working, it was like I started having this identity crisis, which was shocking to me because that surprised me. But that is, it's huge for all of us. It is. So those social skills and those barriers, is that something that can be taught?
Absolutely. Autism's, no matter, regardless of quote unquote functional level, autism excels in systems and in systemic thinking,
mm-hmm.
in being able to analyze a system, break it down, come up with new systems in their areas of special interest in particular. But social skills are just a system.
Right.
And so that's something I've had to learn, and I've had to learn it very, it's like everybody else got a book you didn't get.
Yeah, we hear that all the time.
Manual,
mm-hmm.
And it really, really is.
Yeah.
And so I was privileged being from an island in Alaska. I got to serve an LDS mission,
mm-hmm.
and I went to Japan, which is the land of autism, which was wonderful.
Why do you say that?
What's considered autistic behavior in the United States is normal behavior in Japan. And I'm serious. And if you notice, one of the most common special interests for individuals with autism is Japanese culture, Japanese anime, manga, video games. All that comes from Japan. And so being in Japan just felt like home. Mm-hmm. And then also I could make all the mistakes socially in the world. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, you're just a dumb gaijin. We're fine, you know. But I also, as a missionary, got a guide to how to socialize,
oh,
how to approach, how to talk to people, how to build relationships of trust, how to, you know, demonstrate sincere care for other people. All the things I'd always wanted to do, but, mm-hmm. you know, I got ripped off in social studies class because it wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's actually a weird term for that
right?
class, isn't it? Because it's history, isn't it just history?
Right. I was like, no, I want to learn how to socialize.
I'm like, social studies. I feel like I just learned like Utah history in that or something.
So that really helped. And it taught me too that I could master these skills and that others could as well. And obviously the older we get, the better. Temple Grandin says, it's like being in a play. I'm always in a play. And because the more you're in that play, the better you get at playing that part. And she's like, yeah, it's a neurotypical part, but I can play it good enough that the neurotypicals get along with me and I can communicate effectively with them, which is all I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's what it is. It's realizing that if you're autistic, neurotypicals is just a foreign culture. And like any foreign culture, you can learn the language and maybe mm-hmm. you'll never master it, but you can get good enough at it that everybody accepts you, that, yeah, they're comfortable with you and they're happy to have you around.
And when I'm at work, I always have to be on. And it's kind of, you know, I went on a trip for work once where I had all these viewers come on this trip with me and I came home so exhausted. It was like I had to be, quote, on for 5 straight days, you know, and not that you're going to like go home and kick the dog, but it was just and
that's every day for an autistic adult.
I was going to say, I think that on a lesser extreme, I think that's kind of what that would feel like.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think one of the reasons I went into teaching was that I felt like I had to be on all the time anyway. Mm-hmm. And so might as well go into one of these fields.
Yeah.
And make a difference. But yeah, you have to be on all the time and it can be exhausting. Now, some people with autism, they can't handle that, but there's so many jobs now that you can do remotely.
Well, I was going to say,
by yourself.
Yeah, you know, the social part, it seems like for good or bad, we have transitioned into a world that has become so much less social. But has that been a good thing for the autism community?
It has. I was actually invited to talk in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and I was with the National Association of Disability
Were you
Councils.
Wanting to drop that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It was just me wanting to drop that in.
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm actually trying to just give context for it. But we were talking, the topic that I was asked to address was COVID and the disabilities and autism communities.
Yeah.
And so it was, that was one of the positives that was absolutely identified mm-hmm. and that everybody could identify with is like all of a sudden, transportation is not a barrier. All of a sudden, the requirement to be in person in a, you know, in a very sensorily uncomfortable setting isn't a requirement. You can do so many things remotely now. So remote work, remote meetings, you know, remote ordering of food, all of these things have been a huge boon to the disability community, not just autism, but all disabilities mm-hmm. That have come out of COVID.
Yeah. So, okay, there's a good silver lining. Right. No, I like that a lot. Okay. Are there legal protections?
Yeah. So if you're on the job as an adult, you're under the Americans with Disabilities Act. But the catch 22 is you have to disclose.
If I was going to say that's probably the issue, right?
Yeah. And disclosure, just like diagnosis, is very much a personal issue. It's do you want to do it or not? And mm-hmm. and so if you, you know, if you do need an accommodation to be able to perform the work, you're going to have to disclose on some level. So I'll teach my students how to partially disclose and stuff. But sometimes disclosure can be the beginning of the end of the work relationship.
Yeah. So do you have to disclose like in the onboarding process or can you do that at any time?
It's up to you. You only have to disclose if you need the accommodation. Mm-hmm. If you don't need the accommodation, you never have to tell anybody. So you can choose. Some will, you know, some people with autism, they're proud autistics who that's the first thing they're going to tell you. Mm-hmm. And I tell my students, look, if that's you, that's great. But just come in saying, hey, I'm autistic and here's why you want to hire me. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the most loyal employee you've ever seen. I'm going to have this focused intensity. I'm going to be able to focus on this task and be more productive than any of your other staff. And I'm not going to waste time socializing and you're not going to get any drama out of me.
That's
you know?
So great.
And
I'm
going to think out of the box and I'm going to have all of these things and you're going to love having me as an employee because I'm autistic.
And I'm going to follow every rule.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You asked me to do it. I'm going to do that thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it perfectionistically. And so.
Okay. And let me stop
you. You can go anywhere.
Would you say that is a disability? You would never say that. You know, I mean, those are all things that are amazing qualities, things to celebrate.
Right. And there are whole programs now that only hire autistic workers because they're like, we're just doing so much better than we would if we were hiring neurotypicals. And that's becoming more and more common that people are beginning to recognize that there's a massive benefit to the workforce to having neurodiverse people, people with autism, to come in and work these jobs. But there are specialized accommodations that a lot of times are going to be needed as well,
yeah,
so that the person can feel kind of safe there.
Right, right. Okay. Okay. And Carrie, would you like to weigh in on any of this? We've just been like, as you're talking, Jared, we've just been looking at each other like, oh, this is so great. Oh, yeah, nodding. Yeah.
No, I agree with everything Jared says.
Oh, you're not in this class anymore.
That's right.
You can be open and honest. Yeah.
That's right, Carrie.
Well, I just think that the hardest part for adults, you know, trying to advocate for themselves is sometimes you don't know what accommodation you need. Mm. And so that's where parents can be helpful, is by helping them identify, like, you need somebody to help you write things. Mm-hmm. You don't write very well.
Right.
Or, you know, so that when they're asking for accommodations in the workplace, they can say, I need help with this. I need, you know, an accommodation here. Because if somebody just says, what accommodations do you need? I don't.
Yeah, you've got to be solution focused. And so if you just go to your boss and say, like, hey, I can't do this thing you asked me to do, that's not going to fly.
And that's probably how it would be said, right? Just like very matter of fact, I can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. And instead it needs to be like, I can do it if. And so Carrie's really good at like having our students like figure out, okay, so what is the if?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is the if that you need? Because you can do this. I'm not going to accept I can't. That's not the right answer.
Right.
You can if you get something. So what is it that you need? Do you need to be shown how to do it first? Do you need somebody there with you while you do it? Do you need to practice the thing a few times? What do you need that will make this happen for you?
Right. Okay. Jared, I like to ask all of our guests, what do you think the world needs to know about autism? Where would you like to see things go?
I would just love to live in a world where everybody realizes that no two brains are alike. There's not some magical mind in a jar off in the Smithsonian somewhere that's like, this is a normal brain and it's perfectly normal and all brains are based off of this brain. No, everyone's a little bit neurodivergent. Everybody's mind is unique. And so if we could just be more flexible. It's so funny that people with autism, as they write down like, oh, here are the problems with autism, they're like, oh, well, they're too rigid. And yet so often the world is too rigid in how it responds to autism. If everyone could be more flexible and more appreciative and celebrate the differences in our mental wiring and realize that neurodiversity is every bit as important as biodiversity, that we'd then be able to live in a much more beautiful world where we're able to enjoy so many different perspectives, and autism would be one more.
Are we getting closer to that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Now, things are still, you know, things aren't necessarily great. It was just 2 years ago next month that Lyndon Cameron was shot, 13-year-old boy with autism.
That's another reason I thought this podcast was so important. You know, and I always say, if you ever have officers chasing a teenager and shooting at them and they're unarmed, everyone's losing. You have an autistic teenager running and police are shooting at them. It takes it to a whole new level of, this is an epic fail on every level.
It is. So let me put in another plug. So at Utah Valley University, we offer free training to first responders and to police officers. And I was just a part of that earlier this year. But we need to get so much more information out and train people on how to effectively interface with the neurodivergent people that are around them so that we don't end up with these kind of tragedies. And those are still there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the fear-mongering that was happening early on with autism, a lot of, you know, it's the end of the world and we've got to fight this and it's, you know, that's giving way more and more to, we need to learn how to make space and how to maximize this person with autism. And instead of trying to make them look like everybody else and worry about this ridiculous normal concept. I mean, what is normal?
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we're going to try and maximize them, help them become the very best version of themselves that they can become and live their best quality of life. And really, isn't that what we want for everyone?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on today. Carrie, thank you for introducing us to Jared. Yeah, what an incredible resource. And if people want more information or want to get in touch with you, is there a way they can do that?
Yeah, just look me up on the Scenic View Academy or the UVU websites and it has my contact information. You can just email me at jareds@svacademy.org or follow me on social media. Carrie does all my social media for me because I'm terrible
she's
at it.
She's your people.
She's
to your people.
Okay. She's my people.
You got a guy for that.
But yeah, I mean, what you're doing is so important and so needed. And I love that you're celebrating it, because every life deserves to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. And there's so much good that we're missing out on if we somehow limit ourselves,
right,
and exclude people with different wiring of their brain.
Right.
And autistics, if you know them, are some of the most exciting, interesting, funny, enjoyable, creative people that you ever met. And, you know, our lives are richer because of them. So.
Right.
Thanks.
Oh, thank you for coming on.
Hope I can be on again
sometime. Yeah, we'll definitely have you on again. Thank you so much. And Celebrating the Spectrum is a KSL podcast.